And I kind of freeze. I just kind of like, it's like, I just I'm overwhelmed with this feeling of you're being stared at directly in your face. Whatever this object or person or whatever this thing is that I'm seeing is, I just get this distinct subconscious revelation that it's aimed right at my eyes. These were so large, and they were definitely the source of the light. You know what I mean? Because it was just you could see the radiation in that subtle warm glow. But it was, I would use the word peering. And then when I look back into its eyes, I'm now overcome with an even stronger feeling of, it is real. It's looking at me. Its mouth is open more because it's about to devour you.
Roger had the camera up through his eyes, and he stumbled and fell. I rode across the creek, got off the horse, and took my rifle out of the scabbard in case I had to make a shot.
For 20 minutes with my spotlight, we watched these two creatures.
I'm romantic. I would like Bigfoot to exist. I've met people who swear they've seen Bigfoot.
It's a very ominous feeling. First of all, everything is one color. It's like a dark pewter color. There are no right angles anywhere. There was almost nothing other than a small foldable hatchway that looked recognizable. Everything was really unworldly.
The other option is that these entities are in fact hybrid beings. They are some sort of a hybrid that's coming in and out of our dimension.
My arm contacted him. He just fell back. Very unexpectedly easy into the other one, and I rolled off the table in the other direction, and they came around the table, and the three of them were coming towards me.
Welcome back to another edition of Supernatural Station. I'm your host, Roman Daniels, and joined with me is my brother, Jaren. Hey, we're one day away from Friday, so you guys can guess what day it is, but hey, I am enjoying my time with my brother over here. We enjoy doing this, so we're ready for a fun one today.
Yeah, who do we have today joining us?
We got a gentleman named Billy, and he's got some really cool stories. How you doing, man?
Hello, citizens of Gotham City. I am Billy, and I do a lot of talking, so I'm really glad you guys let me come on here and do more talking.
Well, that's why we wanted you, so we can do less of it.
Yeah. Ears open.
Well, why don't you tell us, tell the audience and stuff just a little bit about who you are. I know we have a little bit of a history and stuff, but if you don't mind just telling the audience that listens a little bit about yourself. It can be vague. It can be whatever you want.
Right on. Yeah. Well, I'm a Pisces. I like long walks on the beach. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so I was a performer for years and years, doing magic shows and producing magic shows and performing close-up magic anywhere I could and things like that. And, my interests are usually along the creative and artistic. So anything that I come across that, oh, hey, that'd be fun to try, I try that. So that's about me in a nutshell, is always trying the next, creative endeavor.
Well, yeah, we're happy to have you here. And, we were talking a little bit off air about some of the stuff that you've been through, some of your experiences and just some of the different things that we want to get into on the show. And pretty much everything's open. Everything's welcome. This is the type of place that we like to kind of talk about really anything and everything. I mean, nothing's really off limits, but we do like to try to stay within the weird, right? The strange, the supernatural.
Which is great. Yeah. I'm a very weird person. So.
Well, perfect. What had you get into like the magic in general? Was it just the, let me find out if this is legit or not. How do I trick people?
To be real, the way I started in magic is the same way a lot of magicians start, which is somebody showed you a trick. You know, when I was a kid, the first trick I ever saw, my dad did actually. And it was a simple, well, I won't give it away. they'll come for me if I do. But I will say it's a simple like magic shop trick. If you have 450, you can go to any basic magic shop and do this trick yourself. But, do they still have magic shops? I haven't looked for one in a while. Magicshop.com, perhaps. I don't know. Anyway, something online. But so anyway, he used to take back in the days when he smoked. He quit smoking when I was quite young. But back before then, he would take an entire cigarette and very obviously in front of he didn't wear sleeves. He wore like short sleeves all the time. And he would hold it in front with one hand, wrap his hand around it with the other very slowly where you can see his hand just swallow it and envelop it. And then when he opened his hand back up, it was gone. And there was really nowhere for it to go. And, you know, so that was enough for me to go, okay, what? And then, you know, he never told me how to do it. And it took me a good, actually a good 8 years later before I realized how he did that trick. I even did the trick myself with a different, it was a different trick, but with the same method. And then later discovered, wait a minute, is that what you do? And he was like, oh yeah, that's what I do. And I was like, oh, it was that easy. Huh? Okay. I guess he was waiting for me to learn it. I don't know.
Is that kind of like a illusionist or magician's like secret? Like you're not supposed to give anything away. You're just kind of like supposed to let people figure it out.
Well, that's the old sort of, I don't know what you call it. It's a cliche really, but it's sort of the statement is, you know, magician never reveals his secrets. That's what everyone always says. But the truth is magicians will reveal their secrets if you buy them.
Yeah. For $9.99, six payments.
Yeah. My tricks are highly expensive, and you can buy them at billy.com. No, I don't have a website, but
so who's all right? Let's just go there really quick because it's not really related, but I just want to know who's your favorite like mainstream magician.
Mainstream?
Yeah, if you had
you made a list of every what I would call mainstream magician, I wouldn't call any of them my favorites.
That's not true.
I'm a very big fan of Penn and Teller.
Okay.
And they've had probably, I forget about, they're pretty much mainstream. I don't know anyone, or at least a household name. Most households know this name. But they've had probably the longest running successful show in the Rio for so long. Or if they're still there, I hope. I haven't checked in a while. But they've been heroes of mine. I've unfortunately never gotten to see their show live. But I did get to see legendary magician Lance Burton, who is retired now and has been for a while, unless he's ever come back that I didn't know about. But when he was in the business, he was the business. He was like, he's what I'd call like the last, like perfectly classic magician. The tail coat and the top hat, he just rocked everything on stage. At the end, you know, he threw a top hat, just sails over the audience in a big circle and returns to his hand and things like that. You know, very classic and awesome. But he still had a very youthful vibe and a very charismatic vibe. So both of them I love. But my all-time favorite magician probably ever is Jeff McBride, who is in Las Vegas probably still. He does the McBride Magic and Mystery School in Las Vegas, the Tend, which was probably the biggest honor of my life. And in a very short amount of time, I learned probably 4 years worth of Hogwarts training, you know, and it was great. It's fantastic. I met a lot of magicians. That's actually when I saw the Lance Burton show, was when I was attending that school. But I was just excited to drive by the Penn and Teller billboard. I was so stoked that to even be in the same town, you know.
Gryffindor or Slytherin, and that's all you need to say.
Slytherin.
All right. Yes.
Yeah.
My brother's shaking his head over here.
I'm nodding. I'm nodding left and right, not up and down this time.
Oh, yeah? You're not a Slytherin fan, huh?
Yeah, I'm Gryffindor through and through, bro. I have to be.
Well, I'm not a big fan of the what I'm going to use the word. Here it is, a big P word. Here it goes. Prejudice that a lot of Hogwarts fans have on Slytherins under the belief that they're all evil or that they're all bad guys.
Yeah, and I don't think that either. You're right. The movies did
a good job at dispelling that myth. That near the end, they pretty much locked every Slytherin up in prison or whatever.
Yeah. Well, it's just because all the Slytherins had like the most evil, most powerful magicians came out of Slytherin, but it doesn't mean all of them are, right?
Right. I, for example, am a very powerful wizard who came from Slytherin. Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I just feel like I'd be sorted into Gryffindor. Not that I really have a huge like stake in it, but.
Yeah, I can buy that. I have a feeling that you would be.
But Roman and you are definitely Slytherin. I would say that about the two of you as well. So
Yeah.
Well, awesome. But dude, we were talking offline a little bit, you know, before we got on air here, and you were telling us a couple stories. I don't know if you want to go in wherever you want to go first. I mean, we could start with the one that the eyes, the red eyes. Like that was a cool story. And we can start there, and then we can kind of go into some stuff with that.
Sure. Take a little sip of my beverage.
Real fast before you get into that. So what are your thoughts on, like, let's just say Mothman, Bigfoot, Dogman, these types of creatures?
As you guys know this, I know you guys know this about me already, but for anyone who doesn't know about us and our relationship or whatever, I always considered myself, I really hate the word realist. I'm not going to use that word because what is real at the end of the day? I'm sort of an agent of logic and, as I call myself often, a cold logician. logic and reason kind of is my obsession, and why I, you know, how I trail through life is just contemplating these topics and things like that. I have a very, what I would call a high standard of proof. So something would have to be unequivocally proven to me in order for me to believe it. And I'm just a natural skeptic, or, you know, try not to say I'm a cynic or anything like that, but I'm a natural skeptic. And magicians, whether they were or are, you know, when they start, they inevitably will become skeptical more and more as time goes on, because once you see all the tricks of the trade of how to control a group of people into believing something, you start to see liars everywhere.
Well, what a good person to have on to our show, because all these shows right now, it feels like they just try to have like yes men on or something like that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And that's another example. The TV shows, they follow a formula. And, you know, the yes men are definitely part of that formula. But yeah, at the same hand, I'm not a kind of guy who would I try my hardest truly to never be biased. Any of these things that we would call supernatural, or anything that basically would be defined as supernatural by simply following the criteria of not being proven to exist or whatever, any of these things, even if I don't believe they exist, it doesn't mean that I wouldn't if proof were to reveal itself to me. You know what I mean? That's the whole thing, is that the only reason I don't believe in them now just means I don't believe in them yet. When I was a kid, there were lots of things I didn't believe that over the years I have been proven that, you know, turned out to be commonplace things and not supernatural things. I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't know Disney World was a real place till I was 15 years old.
No way.
I'm not going to lie to you. I grew up in a very small rural part. I was very redneck, born and raised, minimal kid. I mean, we got to go to McDonald's maybe on a birthday. And that was like our city experiences. As far as TV goes, if Gunsmoke wasn't on the TV, you know, I had to watch VHSs that we collected at the yard sales and whatnot and things like that. And I'm not going to say we were poor, but we didn't have a lot of money. So like, so anytime I would see, I thought Disney World was just the place that Tinkerbell flies in front of in the beginning of VHS movies, you know, like that kind of thing. I just thought it was like the company, the fictional.
I wish it was just a fake thing in some ways.
Sometimes I would agree with that. Yeah. But yeah, so that's an example. But so now that's not something I would have been like, I'm never going to believe in Disney World. Like, you know, you're never going to convince me. It wasn't like a serious topic. It was just kind of something that never occurred to me until one day someone said, you ever been to Disney World? And I went, and they were like, so funny. It's like, oh, I thought you were kidding. You are kidding, right? And they're like, no, I went to Disney World over the summer or whatever. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm pretty sure you're insane. And then somebody had to explain to me and just outright say it. Disney World's a real place. It's a theme park. I'm like, it's a theme park? Someone should have said that. No one ever says that. They said it's a world. So, you know what I mean? So
yeah. Well, and that's the thing is sometimes it takes experience to know it, right? And that's kind of why we do this show right now. For one is our experiences we've had. But for two is just opening up that third eye, if you will, or opening up people just to have this conversation, because the world is stranger than fiction, I feel like. It's strange. The fiction that we think it is, it could be way worse than that, I feel like, all the time. Like, I mean, the stuff coming out in the news, like everything, it's like everything's starting to open up now. And we've been saying stuff like this for years and years and years. And it's just always funny to see it like come to light.
We are all mad here.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, if you want, yeah, let's get into that awesome story you told us earlier with the red eyes.
One thing I'd like to add real quick about that thing we were saying is that that's another thing, is these stories that we're going to be going into are examples of what I would have logged away in my memory under the classification of unexplained occurrences, things that I didn't have an explanation for, but there's a lot of those stories that exist in my brain that are not interesting because they don't resemble anything. You know what I mean? It was just like, oh, that was weird. Just a weird thing that wouldn't mean anything to anybody. But then there are specific occurrences that it's like, you know, I don't know that I believe in this, but the people who say they experienced this, their stories sound a lot like this, you know, that kind of thing. So I just wanted to put that pretense out there. So yeah, so if somebody were to one day somehow prove to me that these things were what they seemed like, I would believe that. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to say I am open-minded, even though I sound like I'm harshly biased against it.
Oh, we love it. This is great. Yeah.
So in my family, we hunt a lot. Come from a Native American, rooted family, and those traditions pretty much exist all through the very spine of the culture where I'm from.
Where you guys keep the whole thing, and you honor the animal that you take. And what kind of Native tribe was it? I can't remember what we were saying.
So my mom's side of the family, my grandpa and et cetera and so forth, going backwards, they're mostly Cherokee. And my dad's side, I believe they're predominantly Osage. which, by the way, I have to add, Roman, I think you said a long time ago that you had never heard of the Osage, and I wanted to bring up to you now that Leonardo DiCaprio movie that recently came out, the Flower Moon movie.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all about the Osage. It's all about the Osage. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So I was going to point that out. I was like, oh, hey, maybe people are going to know about the Osage now, you know? And the Osage were, you know, among, there's several tribes, as you, I don't want to go into a huge tangent here, but that make up the Confederacy of, you know, nations, basically the more peaceful, what a lot of people classify as hunter-gatherer types, whatever, you know, the less war type nations banded together with the government thing. It's a whole story that I would recommend you guys look up at some point if you don't know anything about it, viewers or listeners or whatever. But yeah, so I don't think it matters what native tribe nation you're from originally. I think hunting and the outdoors and things like that are a big part of that culture. But yeah, so we hunted a lot, and I was on a hunt and was finishing and realized I underestimated how far away I'd gotten from the house. So I was going to have to start walking back before dark, which I failed to do, because as I was walking back, pretty much 2 minutes down the trail, dark started to hit. And then before I knew it, it was pitch black. And out there in the hills of Missouri and whatnot, there are weird phases where it kind of switches between dark and light as it transitions into nighttime, where the moon isn't up yet certain times, or it's hidden behind trees and such or whatever. So the sun disappears and the moon hasn't risen yet.
So it's legit pitch black at that point.
Very, very dark. And it's said by a lot of people that Native American genes carry, I forget what they call it, some kind of one of those TRPM something gene. I don't know what the alphanumeric designation was for it. I forget. But there's some kind of gene that they say carries like an enhanced night vision. And we've kind of been accused of that in my family because we see pretty well in pitch black. But if you turn on like a street light, like a yellow street light, it just pollutes everything. It ruins your depth perception and things like that. And so I'm walking back along the walk. I do what you always do when you're on a hunt, even if you're quitting, which is keep your ears and eyes open, you know, because you may still see a deer on the way back. And even if it's dark, you can get one. But, you know, it just means you have to clean it in the dark, you know, that kind of thing. And so I'm walking, and I'm very slow and still and walking. And then I kind of hear a little rustling here and there, and I look and nothing. And I hear a little over there, and I look and nothing. And then eventually I hear a little over there, and I look, and I am met with what just instantly gives me the feeling of eyes looking directly into mine. But what I'm seeing are what looks like two dimly lit, glowing, sort of diffused lit, bright banner red, like headlights, like big perfect circles of red light that are filled with red light. And when I say they're glowing, it's like just bright enough to be aware of them in this darkness. Excuse me. And I kind of freeze. I just kind of like, it's like, I'm overwhelmed with this feeling of you're being stared at directly in your face. Whatever this object or person or whatever this thing is that I'm seeing is, I just get this distinct subconscious revelation that it's aimed right at my eyes, you know? And so I kind of just freeze and stare back at it for a good, what felt like an eternity, but I'm sure it was only like 25 seconds before it sort of just, it wasn't like eyelids or anything shutting, but it's sort of like they aimed downward and sort of shut off. And then as they were aiming downward or moving downward, they sort of strafed straight upward into the treetops and sort of just a quick, very quick, eerie speed and time. And, you know, when something like that happens, your instincts take over. And so I kind of had this envisionment in my head that whatever goes up must come down. I thought something was about to land on me or something. So I kind of booked it and I ran off. And I ran for a good 40 seconds before I slowed down to a stop and turned around and listened for a while to see if I could hear or see anything. But the entire encounter made zero noise. I think I kind of imagined a little flutter when it flew up, like a sound, but I don't think it really happened. I think it just kind of happened to me. And then, yeah, and then I had a very eerie walk back with that feeling of being watched and just sort of wondering if, you know, at any moment something was going
to... Really quick, and I don't know if you're done with that, but I just wanted to throw something in there. I mean, there's a lot of things in there that we could go into that have some similarities to people's encounters with Bigfoot at night. But before I get into that, the weird part about not hearing any sound, I mean, that can be a Bigfoot thing too, but there's also this weird phenomenon of that people see of these large, large owls, like these huge owls that are like, you know, obscenely large. And they have,
especially in the native cultures, they talk about them all the time. Like they're just existing out there.
Well, I'm sure you're aware that in the Cherokee Nation, the owl is one of the two sacred animals, the owl and the cougar.
Oh, 100%.
Because of their ability to see at night, their nocturnal ability. And I don't think they were aware of the other nocturnal animals.
And they're completely silent when they fly. We've watched videos on this where it's compared to a falcon or another bird. And it is crazy to see, guys.
Absolutely.
If you haven't seen that video.
They are the most aggressively skilled and agile hunters possibly in the air on planet Earth. I mean, if you're discounting animals of brute strength, like the bald eagle or something like that, because bald eagle, it's kind of like comparing a cougar or something, or a wildcat to like a grizzly bear. It's like a grizzly bear is agile and terrifyingly strong. So like, you know, they're quick and they can reach around and just hook you and grab you, like, you know, but like a raccoon can do that, but they're so weak, they can't use their hands for any kind of help in a fight, you know?
That's really cool. Cause really quick, and I'm sorry to cut you off, but
You're good.
I was just going to say, like the one thing that throws that off, like, cause that's what it really could have been to me in some ways. What throws that off to me is just the glowingness of the eyes. Like usually it's more of a kind of a reflection of on a light. Like if you had a flashlight, and you see the reflection off the eyes, right?
Yeah.
Cause you know, owl eyes don't really do that. They don't like self illuminate. Yeah. And I know it was more dim, exactly. Like you were saying, but
that's what blew me away at the time, because I've seen all sorts of nocturnal eyes appear in the middle of the night. I mean, that's something that when you grow out in the boonies, you're just aware of and you're used to. But these were so large, and they were definitely the source of the light. You know what I mean? Because it was just you could see the radiation in that subtle warm glow. But it was, I would use the word peering. Peering at me.
So was it, you think it was looking directly at you, like it knew you were
I just there. Got that kind of feeling, because they were so perfectly circular, they could have been spheres and I wouldn't have known it, you know what I mean? Like they were, so typically if you are looking at a flat, like, or a somewhat discus thing, like an eye, like a circular eye shape, or a concave shape, like, or yeah, convex shape like that, you know, you would have to be looking at it dead on to get those perfect circles out of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if it wasn't that, it would have to, or if it wasn't a perfect sphere, and that just seems less likely. Whatever it was, when it turned downward, it appeared to be almost like you were pulling a curtain down over it, like whoosh, you know, but it wasn't like an eyelid, like meeting in the middle or anything like that, or, you know, because even owls have eyelids, you know.
So this was above your eye view a little bit at the very beginning. And
it was just above my head sort of height, but I was looking down into what we call the holler, which is just down the hill, the little ravine at the bottom, little creek beds line all through Missouri's hunting grounds and stuff. I was kind of looking down at it, and it was quite a distance away. So I was kind of, if I had to guess based on how I saw the ground moving in the dark like that, it kind of just seemed like it was probably, if imagining it were a head, it was probably 7 or 8 feet tall. Yeah. But then when it shot straight up, it was like I didn't see the movement of what would be considered a body. It just kind of had a shapeness to it. Because, you know, when you're in pitch blackness, every very little bit of light that's reflecting off of things, leaves and such, the way you detect movement is that it's like little lights shutting off because something is in the way of it. Something, it gets between you and that point of light. You know what I mean? So you normally, if you see something moving in the darkness that doesn't have eyes glowing or something, you can tell if it's a deer or a bear or whatever by that basic shadow that it pitches, you know, in that darkness. It's kind of hard to explain, I guess.
Yeah, no, but, I get it. I get that.
Yeah. And this thing sort of didn't have much of a body, just sort of it just seemed like it had a shape that was, it was so fast though when it went upward. So it was kind of like, I don't really know that I even could say I had the milliseconds necessary to really capture a shape. And
were you walking towards this thing, or were you walking away from it? Like what?
It was dead to my left because we were, I'm sorry, it was dead to my right because when I'm walking back to the house, there's a hill on the right the entire way going downhill. And I remember around the spot, it's a little flat spot in the trail.
By yourself, or did you have anybody with you when that happened?
No, I was alone. I pretty much always hunt alone.
Yeah. Wow.
It's hard enough to get one nowadays without somebody there ruining it. So, and I hunt sort of like in an old native tradition where I can't just sit in one spot all day. So I'll get up and if I see one that walks away from me, I'll track it and trail it, and I'll try to flank it and things like that. Most hunters in where I'm from, they don't bother with that kind of thing. But if I'm with somebody, it's just more movement, more noise. You have to kind of more noise telling them, hey, go this way, go that way, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And plus, it seems like most people don't know how to deer walk. Which is a really crucial hunting skill, in my opinion. They just make too much dadgum noise when they walk. So,
when you are hunting in the past, have you ever had, because you have to pack out the animal, right? Like you're killing a deer, and don't you have to pack it out that night, or else fear of something taking it?
Well, I mean, but I mean, there's plenty of reasons you want to do that. I mean, not to mention the fact that they'll start to bloat, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, any dead carcass unattended has the risk of being taken away. Any living body has the risk of being taken away by something if you're not paying attention.
Is this a place you've hunted quite a few times then?
Oh, yeah. It's on family property. So, I mean, it's our spot. No one else.
Maybe it's safe to say this thing was knew you were going to be doing this and was trying to get an easy kill.
I mean, there now, me being the voice of reason, I had created lists of explanations for all of these stories, the things that were possible explanations. I'm not going to say plausible, but I will say that they're more plausible than some of the more supernatural. Like, the only reason I don't say this is my Mothman story is because, me being who I am and how I think or whatever, I kind of have to consider balance of probability, and balance of probability would suggest that these possible descriptors that I can, or conclusions that I come up with, they are technically more likely than something that I've never been shown any legitimate proof of. You know what I mean? That sort of thing. So I have to, that's why they're in my head as unexplained occurrences, because I also have no proof that it's these plausible outcomes either. That's right. Why they're unexplained occurrences. So I've never been one to say it's this or it's that, but I do have to admit that I have a balance in my head of what it's more likely to be.
What would you say, like, in your area, because we don't really know, like, the wildlife as much and stuff, like, what would you say could be the culprit for this thing if it was a natural animal or something, or natural,
like, if it was a natural, like, everyday occurrence kind of thing? Exactly. The most possible I can think of is, so we have had issues once or twice in history. Some properties have this problem constantly, but we've been lucky with poachers and people who come on property after dark and things like that, and spotlight hunt and things like that. Now, if somebody were spotlight hunting, which is illegal, which is essentially just using a bright spotlight and getting the deer's attention, like a headlight, you know, when they freeze in the headlights of a car, if you get them to do that out in the dark and then shoot them, that's unsportsmanlike and considered illegal in most places, I'm pretty sure. But the thing is about these powerful spotlights is that when you shut them off, it takes a long time for the bulbs to cool. And so you have a subtle glow that is in basically perfect headlight shape. And I happen to be colorblind. Now, I see color, but it's a color deficiency. So it's like, you know, my prescription of colorblindness is that certain colors are different and some of them are missing, things like that. Basically, I see colors inaccurately sometimes, or most of the time, really. So me seeing a bright, bright red could have just been the amber glow of a diffusing bulb. I could have stumbled upon a poacher who was doing the same thing I did, absolutely freezing in terror. And then me staring directly at him could have given him the impression, shit, maybe I'm glowing. And then he just aimed it downward and then, or did something. Now, when I say it flew upward or whatever, it happened so fast that I was pretty much, because it aimed downward and it caused me to move a little. So in that pitch blackness, you have this sort of vertigo type effect where certain lights are delayed with your movements because your brain is trying to track them. Something like that could have occurred where I took off running and saw this burnt light in my, that I was staring also right at it. And that burns an image in your eye. You know what I mean? A picture, you know, that kind of thing, or a high contrast image or anything. And me peering through the dark, trying to make out something, is a good strain on your eyes. You know what I mean? So there's all sorts of things. Yeah. And where this happened, when on the spot on the trail, it's relatively close to the road as well. So if somebody were, there's an access point really close to there. They could have just entered and then went straight over the first holler that they came across. And even though that's a big balance of what ifs, that still to me is more plausible than something that I've never encountered proof of.
Oh yeah. That totally sounds like a plausible explanation. And they will probably would freeze because they know they're trespassing. First of all, they're on somebody's property.
And where we're coming from, that could be a death sentence. I mean,
right. People just shoot first, ask questions later. Yeah. You know,
still an intriguing story. I mean, if it is the other, unexplained, it sounds very much like so many Bigfoot sightings out there where the whole forest goes completely silent, which is what you're saying. Everything just goes like dead silent because there's obviously a bigger predator out there. There's eye glow, like you're saying, where it's not very overly bright. It's just there. And then it's above head view. So it's like 8 feet tall, like you're saying. I mean, there's so many explanations that really catch my eye, my ear, based on the things I've researched. But it could be exactly what you're saying. So I like that there's like a tale of two coins here.
Or it could be a Mothman or a giant owl.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. If I came across like evidence tomorrow that the Mothman exists, I would go out telling people I saw it. You know what I mean? Because it's like, that's the thing. Like when I say evidence, I mean, like, I don't mean evidence. There's probably a lot of evidence out there, but I just mean proof, like something that compiled to a definitive. Yeah. Like if someone said, hey, we freaking killed one, and then they put the autopsy on the internet and you're allowed to go see it and smell it, and you're like, that's a real fucking Mothman. I'm sorry, I did. I knew I was going to do it eventually. Anyway, sorry about that.
So actually, I'm glad you brought that up. What are your thoughts on Mothman? And like, because that was such a crazy flap that happened. And then I don't know if you've heard of like the Chicago ones that have been going on more recently, like in the last like 3-4 years.
Yeah, I've seen the headlines pop up here and there.
Yeah, there's been O'Hare Airport. There was like, you know, security guards that ran into like three of them and they just shot straight up in the sky. Had the, you know, the red eyes, like you're saying, with the, you know, big round eyes. Like if it is a real supernatural thing, what would you think it is?
I mean, honestly, if the only reason I applied it to supernatural things at all is because I happen to have been aware of the Mothman as a sort of, I'm going to use the word character, but you know what I mean? I'm not trying to ascribe silliness to it, but you know, the persona, you know, of Mothman as a thing, I knew about it because, well, I didn't know about it until the Fallout universe, the video games, you know, introduced it to me. So because it was on my mind, it was like, if I had seen it without knowing about the Mothman as a story, I would have seen it and gone, well, those are too big to be an animal. That's nothing. And then I would have kept going, probably. But somehow when I saw it, it captured me as, wow, that looks exactly like when those freaking Mothmen on Fallout 76 catch you in the dark, you know, and first time I saw one in the game, it terrified me, you know, and then so when I saw that in real life, it was just like, and I realized that that game's version of the Mothman is like a completely original design. It's not like what everyone says it looks like, but the eyes are similar.
Yeah. Well, and that's
mean, they basically made it a giant mutated moth that sits upright. That's all it is. So like, but the Mothman story is more humanoid and, but the eyes are exactly the same. They look like big red headlights. You know what I mean? Like,
well, and that's part of the reason I brought it up, because you are pretty, Missouri's right by Illinois. It's like right by, and not far from Chicago, probably. I was looking on a map because I'm really bad with the whole geography thing. So I'm like, man, how close is that to Chicago? But yeah, and that's, and I don't know, when was this, when did this happen to you? What year was this?
Oh gosh, I'm really not good at that. I've never been good at that, at perceiving time, but.
What would you say, like 5, 10 years ago?
Well, you know what? I know a good way of deducing it. All I have to do is look up, when did Fallout 76 release?
Like 2016, maybe?
Let's see. I just looked it up. It's 2018. So 2018. Okay. Gosh, was it really that late? This wasn't that long ago, guys. this happened maybe 2020. I'm going to say I knew about the Mothman for a couple years.
There you go.
And that's I played that game with the flap in launch, Chicago. So. Oh, really?
Yeah. All those took place in like 2020, 2021.
Oh, wild. Okay.
Just so you know.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, man. I remember you were talking about like a weird snowman story, and that one really.
Oh, this one could have been entirely fueled by my own imagination, but there was just so much strange, so many strange things rather that occurred at such a short time. And understand about me, I had a very, very overactive imagination growing up, and a lot of people who say that, I don't think they really understand the definition. I was convinced everything was real. Up until a certain age, anything that somebody whispered to me existed, it existed. Like, I watched a movie and for years I would be haunted by it. You know what I mean? It was just like, because it's real. Everything's real. Every fictional medium when I was a kid, I was somehow able to vividly see it and smell it and feel it and vibe it, that it was just so real to me. And certain things terrified me that they were out there in the world. So and what's weird is I have to admit, surprisingly late in life, it went away. So there, that this problem, like over my adult life, I love horror movies, and and now nothing scares me. I have so many nightmares all the time that, it's like, or I've had nightmares my whole life. So I'm just desensitized to them. So now it's like when I have a really, what people would call a terrifying, gory nightmare or something, I might wake up and go, oh, that would have made a sweet movie. Yeah, and I won't even think anything of it. It'll never bother me again. And movies, same thing. No horror movie scares me anymore. I just love them. It's just like, oh, that's awesome. It's all about the effects and practical. They have more practical effects in the horror industry than any other industry, you know, less CGI, that kind of stuff. Anyway, so if you're into movies, horror is really a fascinating genre. So
it's
like,
so much scarier, by the way. I just want to throw that out there. The practical effects are scarier.
Yes. Or not only that, but even like halfway between digital and think about stop motion. When you were a kid, all these movies came out in the late 80s, early 90s that were experimenting with new versions of stop motion. Like, I'm going to use as an example the little anime. I'm going to forget what they're called, and all my Star Wars friends are going to be disappointed in me. But the monster chess pieces that are on the Millennium Falcon, that they turn on the light and it's like hologram chess, but they're little creatures. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So those were all done with stop motion. But the way they move, that's a good example, the one in pop culture. But certain horror movies would use that, and it would somehow be much more terrifying than if you were looking 100%. At a real thing. I have to – oh, and the – what was the movie? The Golden Child with Eddie Murphy. You remember that movie?
Mm-mm.
Gosh. There was a monster near the end of that movie that was like – if memory serves, I haven't seen it and 20 years probably, but it was like a bone, like a horned demon skeleton thing that was made of bones. But I think they did stop motion and it was like chasing the kid. Somehow it looked so dopey that if you look at a picture of it, you're like, well, it just looks like a silly costume. But in the movement that it gives, it terrifies you. It's like, there's something so eerie about that. So, you know, just certain things are like that, and certain things are. But anyway, so yeah, so like Chucky, when I first saw a Chucky movie, terrified me to no end because he could fit anywhere. So I literally went like 5 years of my late childhood being nervous if I walked by a cabinet under a sink or like, you know, because not only was he in there, he was in there for me because for some reason I'm a main character. Why would Chucky be in Missouri in my small town in my little trailer killing me? I have no idea. You know what I mean? But those thoughts don't mean anything to me back then. It's just like my imagination would overpower any logic, which is probably why I got put on the path of, you know, you guys know me to be on, which is sort of a logic obsessed robot. So anyway, so now that pretense is out of the way. What the heck were we talking about?
Snowman, but you do remind me of a Vulcan right now.
No, hold on. Before we get to the snowman really quick, do you ever get any, I don't think you're anything like him, but you were talking about the whole robot thing you mentioned a couple times now. Do you ever get the comparison to the Grandma's Boy guy?
No, not like that. If anything, I get more of a Commander Data. A lot of people compare me to Commander Data from, I know you guys aren't big Star Trek fans, but.
No, I know Data. Yeah, there's actually a cosplayer called Eric Hall here in Utah. He does really great data, really good data.
Really?
Yeah, Eric Hall. Yeah, he's Eric C. Hall, I think. You also look him up, but.
Okay, yeah, I think I'm doing it right now. Well, interesting. I'm seeing some pictures, but I wouldn't be able to know which one is him.
He does a lot of cosplay, so you'll have to dig for a little bit to find the Data ones, but he does a great data.
Cool. Well, yeah. So, that JP is his name, by the way, from Grandma's Boy. The please sit on my face, that guy or whatever. Yeah, I'm not that guy. I've never been like compared to. I don't think I've ever been awkward enough. Luckily, like I'm very weird, and some people have said eccentric, some people say like strange or whatever. But people don't ever call me a super like. Well, people call me a super nerd. They're calling me that because of my like obsessions with Batman and Star Trek and Star Wars and stuff like that. But like only the people that really know me know about that. But the people that I like work with or you know experience on a short term basis, they'll pretty much they'd have no idea I'm a nerd. They just think I'm weird.
You got a cool vibe there. You're not weird like that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I am the coolest.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the snowman thing. I've been thinking about it since you told me the story.
Right. So, and I think when I told you this story last, I kind of realized that I mistold part of it, but some of it came back to me later. So you might hear a little different, slightly different version. But essentially what happened was every winter out there in the boonies, when the snow and ice hits, you're stuck. You have to go through so much unattended road to get to civilization that there's no reason to ever leave during wintertime. You know what I mean? So you kind of just stock up on groceries and you hibernate. And so, and not to mention the hills out here, even if you're going nowhere, you could slide and take off, you know? So I used to occupy myself in the wintertime by making things out of snow like any other kid. But I would really spend some time, like I would spend days carving away at big mounds of snow that I made and try to make big elaborate sculptures. And I was, like I said before, artistically inclined. In fact, I was at the age where it didn't happen to anybody else in school. So I was like the art kid in every grade for a long time. But the thing was, I wasn't that great. I was just early. You know what I mean? So like all these other kids that would become artists later in life, they all caught up to me around like junior high, middle school, and then they passed me. You know what I mean? So it's like as they got older and kept practicing, they got way better than I ever was. But I was like an early artistic kid. So like I did anything that you could that was an art form. I tried it, and I really commit. I really, really committed to every project. So I would make these big elaborate sculptures out of snow, and I would do big sleeping dragons or you know big whatever land by the road. And the whole point was if anybody journeyed out that far away from town, which we did have a couple houses that were past us a few miles, so like people could go out that way, they would see them. And so
did you ever add like watercolor to them, or not watercolor, like food?
Okay girls, today I'm giving you the inside scoop on my favorite place to save this spring. At Ross, it's the spot to get everything you need at prices you'll love. Because when you find brand names for 20 to 60% off other retailers' prices, you'll definitely be finding your next favorite outfit and more. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these deals on your favorite dresses and tops. And at this price, you might as well throw in a new purse or pair of shoes too. But Ross isn't just about savings. They're about giving back. This year, Ross and their customers raised over $4.1 million to support the Boys and Girls Clubs and local youth programs to help kids and families thrive. Seriously, just visit your local Ross and see for yourself. Because I know you like to keep your closet full and your costs low. So what are you waiting for? Say yes for less at your local Ross.
Dyes? Yeah. So I did use dyes, but I usually only used red because that's what I was about to say was that I used to do sort of horror-themed I, you know, like, not like horror, but like dark humor, I should say, because it was like I made one snowman that was on top of another snowman, and he had a big icicle in his hand, and it looked like it was like a knife, and I had put red food coloring all over the bottom one, like he was bitten, stabbed up, but there was a bunch of people standing around, like as if they were betting on the fight, like, or I mean, I had a bunch of other snowmen standing in a circle around it, like they were betting on the fight, you know, and like it was in a fight pit, and they were, you know, just beating the snot out of each other, and I'd put red food coloring spattered all over them. And what's funny is why a lot of horror movies use this as a trick. Snow is the best background for a horror movie because of how high contrast blood looks on it. And so, fun fact, if you put red food coloring on snow, it looks exactly like blood, and it didn't come off nearly as funny as I wanted it to, and it just looked horrific. And I was like, oh God, what did I do? I love it. But yeah, so that's an example. But so one year I decided I'm gonna make one snowman that's just like a simple minimalist, like horror parody of a snowman, like just a beast, you know. And so I made it like a typical snowman with like three orbs, like one big one in the middle one, and a medium one, and then a small one. But I kind of added big cheeks on him so that he would have a lot of lower head shape. Like his head was kind of shaped like a trapezoid, like with a small tapered part on top. And so I did that so that I could give him a big, massive mouth. And in this mouth, I just lined it with icicles that were going in every direction, and they just looked like a maw of fangs, you know what I mean, like venom. All of them were different lengths and sharpness and things like that, but they were all pretty sharp. And I used these little 50 cent plastic, the little cup with the lid on it that you get out of like a 50 cent machine for like a toy, you know,
Oh, yeah,
little
I know what you're talking
you twist the dial and pops out a little cup, or I don't know what you call those, like little pod that's got a toy in it. And I used to save those pods and put stuff in them. So like I took two of them with the lids off and just like stabbed them into the snow, and it gave a strong illusion of this eerie gray, like gradient eyeballs that were just, they didn't look, it looked like they were kind of made out of snow because there was snow inside them, but it just had this shiny spheres to them, you know, and it looked like it was just like kind of like the Mothman story. It looked like it was staring right into you. And it was a little eerie. Like as soon as I gave him the eyes, I looked at it and was like, ugh, you know, I got a chill, and it wasn't from the cold. I dressed it up with finishing touches where I gave it four arms that were all like the two upper arms, like Goro from Mortal Kombat. Like I put two of them that were reaching kind of upward in the air, like he was, rah, you know, like trying to scare you. And then I did one on the side that was kind of reaching forward toward you. And then one on the other side, lower, was like sort of just kind of off to the side, also kind of contributing to the upper arm. Looked pretty cool. Looked like it was in the middle of lunging or something, but it was sort of eerily standing there, like it was prepared to lunge at you. You know what I mean? And it looked good. So I put it up to the road. And I remember taking a little disposable camera, one of those little like wind up, you know what I'm talking about? Like I don't know if they still have those, but in the 90s they were everywhere. I remember taking a picture and going inside and telling everybody about it. People saw it, whatever, no big deal. Fast forward like 2 days, I look out the window. I'm looking to see if there's still snow on the ground, and there it is, and it's snowing, and it's pretty dark, and because of the overcast. And I look out and I see the snowman, and it doesn't even occur to me at first that it's aimed directly at me. Now, keep in mind, I always kept my little, you know, pieces of snow, my snow art or whatever, were always faced toward the road so that people could see them. And this one was aimed the opposite direction now, facing toward the trailer we lived in, and seems to be looking right at me through the, like Michael Myers scene. You know what I mean? You know, Laurie Strode looks out the window, you know, and he's,
Oh,
ta-da!
yeah, I know that too well. I love those movies.
Bing, 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 bing. There I am looking at this thing again, and I don't like that one bit. So I'm like, okay. And my immediate thought was, somebody turned my snowman around. Like, I thought maybe somebody was like, oh, we can't see it face toward the road, and turned it around. My mom, you know, or somebody could have done something like that. I don't know. I went out to investigate, and I get up pretty close to it, and then I look at the road and realize that this is the part I forgot to tell you last time I told you the story, that I told you that I had looked for signs that it had maybe shifted, you know, it had twisted or whatever from the ice or whatever, but or like if it defrosted a bit and then froze again, it could get slick underneath the weight of the snowman and sort of slide. But I looked for slide marks and stuff, and I realized that it had moved, but it had moved what appeared to be slight, it was pretty level ground, but if anything, it was uphill. Like if it was not perfectly flat, that was uphill, like a very, like, I don't know, a 4 degree angle, you know what I mean?
Like
Kind of
natural
uphill.
causes couldn't have caused this. Like it couldn't have
Yeah,
just slipped
it just
into that
didn't look like
position.
that. Yeah, it didn't look natural at all. It just looked like, and I immediately found myself wondering, well, how did this happen? And by the way, I didn't think anything was that weird yet. I just found it kind of odd when I realized, oh, it's that thing I made. But other than that, I didn't think anything was weird yet until this moment when I'm looking at it and trying to figure out how did it move? And then I went to fix it. That's the part I forgot to tell you. I went to turn it back around and I realized that sucker is frozen solid to the ground. So I was like, the heck? Like, it didn't move recently then. Like, you know. And the thing was that when I noticed it, this was like midday, like noon. So like during our winter times, like everything freezes at night and then the sun kind of makes things wet and shiny during the day and then it freezes again, you know. So I kind of thought that could have happened. But then they all tried to pull a Mandela effect on me or something. It was like everybody I told this to, like wondering, did you move my snowman? Hey, did you do something to my snowman? I went around to everybody asking them and everybody I asked seemed to tell me, no, that's the way you built it. They were like, it was facing the house the whole time. And I was like, no, BS. No, I don't buy that. And, you know, and it took me a long time to realize, oh, yeah, I got a picture. So when the picture comes back, you know, I can see it. And it did come back like 3 days later. And our winters are so horrible that this thing sat outside my house for like a week. Before the pictures came back, I went out there and looked at it again because it was bothering me. And this time the arms were kind of aimed downward. All four arms were like relaxed down by its side, not straight down like gravity took them, you know, perpendicular to the earth. But I mean, they were like, if you were to put your arms down by your sides and then raise them up like maybe 4 or 5, 8 inches like that. And all four of them were in a very, like when you see the like a spider has 8 legs. If you look at the front four compared to the back four, you know, they kind of group together. So if you're looking at like a Spider-Man symbol, look at the bottom 4 legs, how they kind of go out and down, you know? So they're kind of doing that. But it, I was like, okay, I guess gravity could have done that. I guess they could have thought enough to do that. But the thing is, the snow has channels. Like if it were to do that, it would have left a trail through the snow. It may have filled with ice or water, but it wouldn't have filled with snow and just made perfect orbs again, you know? But it was almost as if this thing had come alive, moved its arms down, and then went back to being frozen again. There was no sign that the arms got moved or restabbed or anything like that into the body. So I was like,
did you see okay. any really quick did you see any like finger like imprints in the snow from like if somebody was to come and move those arms, let's just say, right?
No, but to be fair though, we get really humid snow, so like it's almost 90% ice at this point. Like right. I don't think anybody yeah. could put fingerprints into it. Like it would have been easy to rip the head off without denting the head. It would have just separated at the freezing point with the other ball. It was hard to kind of, there was basically nothing I could go on to say whether or not somebody for a fact tampered with it or not. And theoretically somebody could have pulled the arms out, stabbed them back in, and then repacked those with snow and it could have frozen again. But it was just like, nobody would have done that at the time. Like my dad might've done something like that as a prank, 'cause he's kind of, you know, wiry like that. But he wasn't there at the time. This was well after my dad and her split up and stuff. I was a child when they split, like a toddler when they split up. So like this was throughout the several years and years and years of my life that I was just with my mom and my brother. My brother just kind of had better things to do. In fact, I don't even know that he was with me that winter. Like he may have been with dad or he could have been somewhere else. I don't remember, but I don't remember him even being around. But I had asked my mom and I had talked to my grandparents and stuff like that. And, you know, so I was just like, what happened? You know, but then I remembered the picture. I went out and got the picture after the picture came and they all convinced me. They're like, no, his arms were always down and he was always facing the house, blah, blah, blah. But when I got that picture, it was my proof. It showed the house in the background or the trailer in the background with its arms up. Roaring.
And it was looking the opposite way of the house.
Yeah. I took like a cinematic shot of it where it was like, even at an angle where it looked like it was coming at the camera. Yeah. And then so I was like, okay, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go out, take the snowman, and I'm going to turn it around back towards the road. And I'm going to put a stake through the bottom and that will pin it to the road or to the ground. You know what I mean? Then if it moves, I'll know something's up. You know what I mean? I'm going to watch it, that kind of thing. But when I went out that next time, I went over to move it and I'm looking at its face and kind of like the Mothman thing. I just kind of get this feeling and I'm looking at this thing's face and I always made him like as tall as me. Kinda. I wanted to be able to like give it my jacket and stuff. If I wanted to like put clothes on it or something like for fun. Sorry. Excuse me. And so I got this feeling. I looked at it and it just has this odd, ominous vibe to it. Like it's looking into my soul. And then I kind of have this distinct feeling that like the face was different, like the mouth shape that I had given it. Now, and I mentioned before, any snowman you make in Missouri is going to slowly deform over time. But this thing, its face held up pretty well. The deformities come in the form of like little sunken pits where like water hit it, or like where it rained a couple drops with the snow and it hit it and just kind of created a pool of water that had a different temperature. So it's kind of like lumpy and obvious. It looks like it was exposed to the elements, you know what I mean? So it doesn't look in any eerie way or anything. It's very recognizable when wear and tear happens to your snowman. And I know this because I built a lot of snowmen. But this was different. It was just like almost like I had built a different mouth shape. And it just didn't seem possible that it could have eroded, though. It looked like the mouth was just a bit more closed. I had made it a bit more closed. It was like now it was like a bit more open. And I'm standing right in front of it. And I'm overcome with this feeling of just for a second imagining that it could have moved on its own gave me this overpowering fear. Keep in mind, I was really young, that's what happened. And then when I look back into its eyes, I'm now overcome with an even stronger feeling of it is real. It's looking at me. Its mouth is open more because it's about to devour you. I just had this feeling in my head and I absolutely wrecked it. Stomped on its body. Oh, and the part that weirded me out was one of the biggest icicles of its mouth were gone. I mentioned this last time I told the story, and it was sitting beside the snowman directly underneath the arms. When I found the arms laying down at their sides, there was an icicle underneath one side of the arms, and it almost just had this feeling like if a person were to just drop a knife and just stand there nonchalant. And that was just enough for my imagination to send me off the deep end. And I absolutely pile drive that thing into obliteration. And then not only that, I was afraid that it could somehow reform. So I took like handfuls of a couple of the icicles and threw them in one direction in the woods, grabbed one of his eyes, lobbed it in one direction in the woods, grabbed the other eye, threw it in the lagoon. You know, like I separated, divide and conquer type thing. I had to ensure that it couldn't come back because all the weird things that had happened. I convinced myself at the time that it would, that it was interested in coming back, and that it had an agenda, which is why it was looking at the house in the first place.
This thing didn't regroup again, did it? Like the next day?
No.
And reform?
No, that was the end. But I'm not going to lie. I was even put off by the picture. The photograph that I took of it staring into the camera weirded me out, and I ended up destroying it.
So. Well, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, some people might think of this story and be like, you know, because we all have stories like this, especially when we're kids and stuff, because I think all of us have more overactive imaginations and stuff when we're kids. You know, it's kind of sad we lose that when we become adults, because I'm trying to get back to having that imagination. I'm like, man, where is my imagination? But, you know, like the cool thing about you remembering this story means that it had an impact, meaning that it was a different thing than the norms. You know, like it was a weird thing. Like, and so I like these kind of stories from people, because it means that the reason it's in your memory is because it was such a strange thing.
It gives the normal credence because it is so different than like just your basic imagination of thought, you know, of things that you've seen like that before.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm glad you took it out. I'm glad you took it out, man, and just do that thing.
Well, that's the thing is like, and so if you're interested, like with what you asked me earlier, now if I were living in a world where every supernatural thing I ever heard of was proven to be a real thing, if I had to ascribe something as to what this was in that world, like my imagination told me when I was growing up that it was essentially a shapeshifter that already destroyed my snowman and just took its place so that it could hide, you know, in our yard. And,
that's creepy. That's a creepy thought.
Yeah, and I think that, and it seemed like, and my story was in my mind, and my imagination was that every time it had gone about its business to try to do its thing, I would either wake up or show up. It would have to like find its way back, and you know, in a hurry, and drop what it was doing. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, geez, that's crazy. Well, that's a good story. We should take just a quick break because I don't want this recording to disappear. I've had this happen before. We're gonna pause this really quick, and then we'll just get back into it really quick. So
absolutely.
Well, we're back and we have Billy on the show. We took a quick break, but we got more coming. He's got more stories and we're excited to hear him. So
this guy's wild from the Midwest, you know, I love it. So we have some cool things. So you talked about the snowman story. You talked about the, I guess I would sort of factor it as a Bigfoot story. Roman's factoring it as an owl story. You're factoring it as a spotlighter. We're not sure what it is.
Or Mothman. I like to nickname it the Mothman story, even though I'm not actually convinced.
But at least there's a chance. You're saying there's a chance, Jim Carrey style.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Have you just had any, like, unexplained phenomenon that's sort of, like, a spiritual...
Well, there's been a lot of stuff that, like, among all the common stories you hear. Like, okay, let me try to phrase this better. So UFO and Sasquatch and like those kind of stories, things like that, those happen from like a select certain amount of people around the world. But like things like ghost stories, stories about a ghost encounter, almost everybody has a story like that. Like, or I mean, statistically, probably just over half of people are like somewhat in the belief that ghosts exist, according to the most surveys and stuff. But like, but still, it's a shockingly higher amount of people that report those stories than report like UFOs, and then Bigfoot is even more rare, and then going on, you know what I mean, though? So like, I hear more ghost stories from regular people, like common everyday people, than anything. Like when I hear about a Bigfoot story or something like that, I have to find that online, or like you guys or something like that. But like, not like, I don't like know anybody day to day that talks about that kind of stuff. So I hear the ghost stories a lot, and most of the stories I've heard that people are saying, oh, I've seen a ghost, or when they tell me the story, I'm always a little shocked that they jump to the ghost conclusion, because the common stories by common people are seemingly so easy to explain away that I'm like, you got a lot of stretching to do before you start getting into the supernatural territory on that story. But I have heard some that are pretty bizarre. And I think to myself, well, if they told that story accurately, that's pretty wild. But I've heard a couple of those. They're really easy for me to explain away, though, somehow, ghosts are. So I probably am less likely to believe in ghosts than anything else that we talk about tonight. Like, I'm honestly more likely to believe in the Mothman than I am ghosts. or I'm more likely to believe in extraterrestrials than I am the Mothman or ghosts. But anyway, so that being said, I just got to say, you know, so take what I say with a grain of salt on spirits and such.
Which is strange, because most people say ghosts are like the very first one they'll believe in before anything else. Yes, then they'll believe in other things. Because we all have a spirit in us in a way. It almost feels like we're connected to that in a way already. So
I do definitely believe in, now I can't define it, but I am aware of the existence of, I'm going to use the word soul. It's kind of like the force, though. It's like, it's really hard to define or put your finger on, but I do have a faith in sort of a spiritual existence within everyone. But I just don't believe that they're out there walking around messing with people. So yeah, that's just me, though. This is my personal belief.
So because I might have got that mixed up. So you haven't had a ghostly experience, but you have had a UFO experience then.
Well, no, I have had a lot of experiences that people who do believe in it would probably believe that that's what it is.
Tell us about them. Let's open these floodgates, you know what
Yeah,
I mean?
It's just one of those things that I wouldn't classify it, you know.
I've been seeing things from your experiences that you haven't seen yet. So I think maybe some listeners will say they're seeing things from that experience that I'm not seeing. Sure.
I'll start with the thing that you were, the shorter one is the what you were calling the UFO story. It's just a thing that, and by definition, it was a UFO in the sense that it was a flying object that I could not identify. But I was not one to ascribe any sort of extraterrestrial meaning on it just immediately based on the observation. It was, but the sort of Shyamalan twist at the end is sort of what makes it a weird story. But yeah, so I remember getting to my grandma's house with her, and we both spotted something that we immediately thought was a spotlight at first, but it was colored, like it had red, and then it shifted to blue and back and forth. And then it was up in the sky, and it was making these really big sort of, it's hard to say it was fast or slow, but it was steadily moving circle that was really grandiose up in the air. And at first we thought it was something fairly close to us that was moving really quickly. But the weird thing was, after a while of staring at it and walking around going, what in the world is that? We noticed that it was sort of passing in front of, or I'm sorry, behind the horizon, like the, you know, as far as you can see before you don't see anything else, it was passing behind there, which meant it was actually traveling several times faster than we ever could have thought to, you know, cover that distance. So we kind of sat there and watched it for a while, and then it kind of got a little bit faster, and then a little bit faster, and then it kind of just zoomed off in one direction, and there it goes. Like had a fluid motion, like from the circle, you know, zooming off in one direction, and there it went. And so we were kind of like, what in the world was that? There's a pretty famous, or I should say infamous, gentleman's club that was near that area. And where we live, you could actually see the nearest town through the horizon. You can see the lights off in the great, great distance. You would often see the spotlights from this gentleman's club. And so we thought it might have been something new from them. But then when I explained this whole story to my dad, his response to me was, you know what you need to do? And I said, what? And he said, you need to go ask your Aunt Debbie, which is his sister, about the time that she saw a UFO. And I was like, all right. So I walked off and found Aunt Debbie, and I said, hey, my dad told me you saw a UFO and I should ask you about it. And the story she told me was identical to the story that I was telling my dad, like in every way, the exact movements it was doing, the color shifting, the big circle, except the difference was she saw her story something close to 45 years prior and in not the same place, but a nearby place, like a few towns over, essentially. So that kind of weirded me out because I got to explode and say, that's exactly what I saw. I saw that too. So yeah, that was something.
You know what's crazy about the the colors that you're talking about, like all the different colors, right? Like that's a very rare thing when it comes to the western side of the United States or the very far eastern side of the United States. It's kind of like localized to the Midwest. I've noticed from a lot of stories for UFO encounters or what are suspected to be UFO encounters have all those bright colors. They have all these different colors going on in UFO encounters. Whereas like if it's the West, it's usually just white and blue or, you know, East has a lot of red lights. And I'm wondering, like, I'm starting to kind of compile these things together to try to figure out what that means. But
yeah.
I've noticed that very commonly. I mean, there's parts of Florida that do see, like Florida and Arkansas and stuff, that see some of those different colors in their UFO encounters. But a lot of it is like the Midwest, kind of where you're at and stuff, which is interesting.
I'll be damned.
I don't know what that means, though. Like, oh, it reminds me of like Star Wars. You know how they have like the little crystal for the lightsaber, and it
the kyber crystals. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I wonder if there's a reason for those colors and what that means. But we're gonna digress if we go on that. Yeah,
I think the most common, at least maybe not by scientists or theoretical physicists or anything like that, but at least by filmmakers, the most common hypothesis there seems to be that it's language, that it's how they communicate through visual and auditory stimulation.
So I wonder if like the native
that's how we do. We use auditory visual stimulation. It's just different.
I just wonder if like the native cultures, like from the Midwest versus the West or the East, communicated, you've seen those colors, or like they understood those colors, you know, back in the ancient culture.
Yeah.
Like these things are still coming back to visit modern cultures.
Are you saying
to
like
communicate
auditory visionary stimulation is like similar to like the red and blue lights, right? Could be like a communication of like the golden arches from McDonald's. We all know it's McDonald's by seeing it from far away.
Or, you know, like when someone texts something to somebody, it's easy to misconstrue what they're saying because you are missing the visual and auditory responses. And
you're missing the emotion.
Yeah, people's hand gestures and micro expressions of their face. Even if somebody, if you tell somebody, tell me a story, but don't react at all physically, they still will. They won't be able to stop. The micro expressions are unstoppable because our brains are in trying to. But the thing is, we were born with big flapping mouths on our heads that make weird noises when we make certain constrictions of our body. So that's what we use to talk. But like if you were born with a bioluminescent light in the center of your chest or something like that and no mouth, how would you communicate? I'm just saying, you know, so they'd have to find a way to do that. Communication for any life form is necessary, even the wild animals,
right?
Through their calls and hails and so
That's crazy. That's crazy that your aunt, I guess, had a similar, like almost identical experience.
It was identical. The way she described it, it was pretty much she was telling my story. Yeah.
Do you think it's like the exact same UFO? Like, I wonder if it was like a fold in time. Like she saw the exact same thing saw the exact. It was just you were in a different time frame. That's weird, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. How do you feel about like Matrix paradigms like that? Like switching, like something that happened that you're seeing right now could have been from the past, but you're seeing it again. Does that make sense?
Like a glitch in the system or something.
Yeah, like when you think of like Einstein's whole idea of like folding time, right? That whole idea.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I know when people refer to time being relative and everything, the only practical observation anyone can make that could like really quantify that theory is the simple truth that there are times that our perception, and the thing is, our brains, the way that they identify or read time passing or things like that, it never changes. And yet we constantly feel like certain time periods take forever, or some of them seem to go by very quickly. And like you could be on a lunch break and do a bunch of things that take up your whole lunch break. Like me, I do the same routine every day for lunch. I get the food, I rush back, I eat it, I do a couple of specific things that help me in the day, and then I go back. And I usually have just enough time to do them all. And then there are some days where I do the exact same things with seemingly no differential whatsoever. And then you'll look down at the clock and I'll realize, I somehow have 15 minutes. And that shouldn't be possible because I rush. I have no extra gaps of time. I'm a very efficient, routined individual when it comes to the time I take to do daily tasks. Things like
a lot,
that.
A lot of people are like that. Like, you know, we have a lot of routines. People, I think it's really hard for, and it might just be the way that we're built because of survival and stuff, but you kind of like whatever works for your mentality and for your physicality and all this stuff. Like you just do the same things to whatever is successful for your mentality and for your physicality, right? That type of stuff. Yeah.
And it's another thing too. This is a pretty bogus theory, but I'm just saying, throwing it out there. You know, you also talk about certain people. It's like, oh, she looks really good for her age, or what? She's only 23. She looks about 55. That kind of stuff. What if you were told one day that every moment in your life that seemed to go by quickly, you actually aged that fast as well? Like what? Because we age so slowly that it's unobservable, because like you see yourself every day and you think, oh, I look exactly the same as I did a year ago. But someone who hasn't seen you in a year will go, wow, you look different. It's that kind of thing where it ages so slowly that you can't observe it. But imagine if you could, and you actually notice that there are fluctuations, your body actually decaying at a faster rate because of how you are perceiving the time around you. Like, imagine if that were a thing. You know,
that would be not very good.
It's kind of a random thought.
Yeah, I mean, like, think of, we're big time nerds, obviously. People are going to be like, man, you guys are big comic nerds and big game nerds and stuff. But I'm sitting there thinking of, like, Superman, right? And how he ages at a slower level on the Earth we're on, you know? And just the fact that the atmosphere is different, it kind of aids to his youthfulness that lasts longer than everybody else, you know?
And granted, environment is a huge variable when it comes to how people age, which is probably the greatest indicator, or greatest cause of why people seem to age differently. But still, it'd be pretty wild to imagine that that were a factor.
I think that's sweet. Yeah. Do you have any other cool stories that you want to go into? Any other things that you can think of that's just, or just, you know, like you said, you file things away that are unexplained, right? Things that you can't quantify or category into something that's explainable. Do you have anything else you can think of that comes to mind?
Oh, you know what? I did tell you a ghost story once. I guess it could be classified as a ghost story. I'm going to have to, while I'm explaining this, I'm going to have to Google and do a quick Google and see. It's got a famous name, I think I was told. But it's like a floating light that like moves around in the Midwest somewhere. I know there's several of them. Like there's the Paulding light, like, but that's specifically in Paulding, Michigan, which is why it's called that. Things like that. There are mysterious lights that are reported that are, it's basically like a floating wisp of an orb of light that just kind of moves through the forest or through the hills or wherever the heck it is. There was one I heard about a long time ago where we were on a Halloween hayride. And so, of course, people were telling ghost stories and local folklore and things like that. And one of the stories were the best ghost stories start out with, and this one's a true story. So anyway, but it began with a whole story about a guy who moved all the way from Ireland or something or another. I don't remember exactly what happened. I'm not going to pretend to know the story because I will butcher it. But one way or another, his spirit was this ball of light. And there was a weird detail of the story. It had something to do with the fact that he worked on railroads or something. And there's a railroad that went through this town. And I wish I could even remember the town. I was very young when this happened, but I have a pretty good memory for this stuff. But he told me that there's a sign that the light is nearby, and it's that they believe that an indicator is that ants will walk, well, like they normally do in a straight line, across the railroad track, which apparently, according to them, ants don't do that for whatever reason. So I'm just kind of throwing that in there. Rednecks have a lot of strange, stupid additions to their folklore. I'm saying this with love because I myself come from a redneck family. I've heard someone say that if you hang a shovel in your tree, it'll stop raining. I'm just saying, like, there's some really silly things that come out from the backwoods. But yeah, but supposedly if you happen to notice, oh, hey, look at these ants. They're in a straight line. They're going right across the railroad tracks. Somehow that was an indicator that this light was around. So anyway, but then one day I remember going through that town and telling that story with some pals, and we were on our way to an event that we used to do every year, and we're all in the same vehicle, and we're going through this small town, and I was like, oh, I recognize this town. This is the town. And I basically told the same story. And when we passed back through the town a second time after the event was over and we were coming back through, it was dark. And I looked up the hill of the bluff. In Missouri, when you travel around any random road through small towns, the road, like right next to the road, will be a massive rock wall, which will actually be what used to be a massive hill or a bluff that they just cut so that they could keep the road going through there. So there's massive rock walls where you can see signs that they used to drill and dynamite and blow the walls out and stuff. So you'll see these structures. These are probably all over the place, but it'll look like a giant staircase, like for a giant, somebody whose foot is as big as a minivan or a work bus or something. But it's where they used to cut and blow out dynamite, you know, that's the safe structure to do so that it doesn't like cause a big hill for slides and stuff. So anyway, we were looking up one of those big giant rock walls, and up above it where the trees had grown over the years, because a lot of that blasting was done, you know, 50 years ago or 80 years ago, it depends. We saw what looked like a headlight sort of coming at us through the trees. We were like, or what I said was, is there a road up there? And they were like, I don't know. And I was like, yeah, I guess I'm the most familiar with the area. And I was like, I don't think there's a road up there. But then I realized the obvious was looking me dead in the face, and I didn't notice, is that we're driving along this outer or this country road, and this headlight is staying even with us, even though it seems to be shining at us. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, what is this car strafing sideways 45 miles an hour through the trees?
Really,
I don't
quick,
think
when
so.
When you say headlight, you're saying headlight, right? Like a singular, not plural?
Correct. Like a single ball of light. But this one looked more like, when I say it's a headlight, all I saw were the beams of light coming at us from something over the hill through the trees where I couldn't see. But it looked exactly like when a car is pulling into your driveway or something and they kind of turn. You kind of see a little bit of light, and then it gets brighter and brighter and brighter, and then it's aimed right at you. You can tell, and then it passes by you. You know what I mean? So, right. Like, you kind of, and if it's cloudy or dusty or anything, you see those beams when it comes right at you. It beams kind of fly across the room real quick, where you actually see them marked by dust or whatever. And so we were kind of seeing that, which meant that the source of light was in some form aimed at us. But for that to be true, the car or whatever was causing it, you know, what I imagined at the time was a car, what I thought it looked like. That's what it reminded me of, was like when a headlight does that. It would have had to have been strafing to the side, sideways, like at 45 miles an hour. And I'm like, A, no car can do that. And B, no vehicle could go straight that fast through the trees up there, you know, through the woods. But it was keeping up with us. That's what was weird. And then, so we stopped the vehicle, and I got out, and I kind of moved up the road a bit where I could see up the hill better, and this thing was moving. I could see the beams of light were just, and that's when I realized it couldn't have been a headlight, because the beams were going in seemingly every direction. This was somehow a ball of light that was emitting light as a light source.
Could you see color at all? Like, was it like mostly white, yellow, like a headlight?
It's pretty much all white, just like a headlight would be, like if it was a really clean white LED light or something. But it was, I never saw the ball itself, or what I'm calling a ball. I could tell from the beams of light that were showing in the fog and whatnot that it was coming from a focal center. You know what I mean? That implies that it's some sort of.
And this was just like it's just wilderness area. Like, I mean, it's off the road, but like it's just
like, yeah, it's like along and near railroad tracks and along near like outskirts of a small town. So like what you'll see is like you'll be driving 40 miles an hour and you'll be like, oh, there's two trailers. And then you won't see anything for 2 minutes. And you'll be like, oh, there's a house. And then nothing for 2 minutes. And then, oh, there's a decrepit gas station from 50 years ago. That kind of thing. But it's not isolated away from people. But yeah. it's not considered a public area either or anything like that.
The behavior of it is kind of strange because it reminds me of like it's scanning for something or like it's looking for something. You know what I mean?
Well, it looked like it was following us because this whole thing happened over like 2 miles. So we're going like 40 miles an hour for 2 miles.
That's a long distance.
Yeah, and it was just keeping up with us in the woods up above. Like, and we were like, what in the world? And at first I thought it was just us moving that was giving the illusion, you know, and that because sometimes you can see the moon and it'll kind of look like it's following you or something. But in reality, it's just the way you're moving or something. But yeah, it's like whatever it was moving quickly. And when I got out of the car to try to look at it, it was still moving, but it went in a different direction. It like went off back the way it came. And I was like, what in the world? It almost like I spooked it. And I was like, that's bizarre. Yeah. So,
I mean, that sounds like something. I don't know. It doesn't
sound. But it was in the town, though, where the guy said that the weird light happened. So whatever
yeah,
it is,
it
it's something
like
other
saw
people
that
have seen.
The same thing or like it definitely doesn't sound like what I'm trying to, like I was at first trying to assign it to like a dirt bike, you know, driving around, or I was trying to assign it to like.
No,
a,
and that's another thing.
ATV.
It didn't make any noise.
Wow.
I could just hear the subtle sound of leaves from the breeze around.
There's
me,
not like a deep hum.
I didn't hear nothing. I think my car was still running, to be fair, but it wasn't like, you know, but it wasn't making the loud gravelly sound of the gravel road, and I could hear a lot better.
That's a cool story.
Super cool.
And these orbs are everywhere. These orbs are people have so many stories about these things. Yeah, it's like a ghost light though. Like that one reminds me a little bit more of like it's less like the will-o'-the-wisp things. It's less like those things, like the orbs that move around on their own, and like, you know, Irish folklore talks about the will-o'-the-wisp. It's not like that. It's like this one reminds me more of like, because it had the headlight. Like the beam of light that was flying out, you know?
Okay, so this is strange. I just found this when I was trying to, because I had results up on my screen this whole time of what this thing was called earlier. I see that the Paulding light is on here, and I've heard of the Paulding light, but I never knew anything about it. I found these other ones. Apparently, the one in Michigan, the one we're referring to, they're claiming it was the ghost of a murdered railroad engineer. And not only that, but this other one from Detroit supposedly is a railroad brakeman. And the one that I was told about was a railroad employee.
Wow.
See, that's bizarre. That's a now.
Dude, that falls in line with our little Supernatural Station logo, just so you know, real quick. You know, we
that's
have
true.
A little train.
That is true. I forgot about that.
Whole reason we use that train, and a lot of people probably don't know because we've never really explained it, but I've had a fascination with ghost trains for a long time.
Yeah.
And just the idea that people see these trains. I mean, the same thing with ships on the sea. It's just weird that you have these people that operate trains or operate like machinery in the woods that see these ghost trains, you know, and or see these ghost ships on the sea. And it's just really hard to explain. It's like one of those things that you really can't explain. You know, these people are out there all day long, all night long doing this job, you know, in and out, day in and, you know, day in and day out. And it's just hard to explain when they're adamant, like, this was a ship or this was a train and it went right through me or it went right past us and disappeared, you know? Mm-hmm. And I love that stuff. I think it's really cool.
Which, by the way, I hate to slightly break topic here, but it's along the lines of what you're talking about. Another reason it's a shame you guys don't watch Rick and Morty. There's a character on there called Alan Rails, who's literally a Green Lantern parody, and all he can make is ghost trains.
Hey, I love him already.
Yeah, he comes out saying, I would have just used a ghost train. And Rick's like, oh, hey, everybody, big surprise. The ghost train guy would have used a ghost train.
That's awesome. Nice. Well, hey, I think this has been great. I think this has been good. Do you have anything else you want to add while we have you? Because, I mean, you can plug whatever you want to if there's anything you're working on that you want
I can't really think of anything. I've been kind of kicking back and doing some private art projects lately. Nothing really public or nothing. Just trying to use my free time when I can. I work a lot and things like that. So it's I've been doing a lot of that. I just finished a Mandalorian helmet this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do enjoy it. I like to make props and such as well. Another example of something I got into once just because I heard about it. Yeah, I mean, I think we ought to do this again sometime, but I could probably fill an entire day discussing the like Native American mythos surrounding supernatural events and such. There's been a lot of things that I've heard stories about in my family line.
You know, it's been a pleasure having you, and you know, this has been great. You know, I love your stories, and
absolutely.
Once we share it, we'll let you know when it gets posted, so you're aware of it and tag in it and stuff. And
yeah, all right, cool.
You know, if there's anything you want us to throw out there when we post it on our social and stuff, let us know. We'll throw it in there.
All I could think of to add is to be excellent to each other and party on, dudes.
And I gotta say this: you gotta know when to hold them, know when to fold them.
Know when to run away.
Know when to chill.
There you go.
I love it. All right, man. Well, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk soon for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is right. Batman signing off.
Great having you, Batman. We appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas.
See you, man. Have a good night.
Have a supernatural time.